Look at that, guys. DGS, as a local hometown boy, it's pretty damn cool that we just went from Dave Murray, who I've known for 24 years now, to Bernie Miklas, who I now consider a friend. It's pretty good for a kid from South Roxanne, Illinois.
Not doing bad, Dave.
Right? Hey, Bernie.
Hey, what's going on today? Everybody good?
Everybody's good. Hey, Bernie, can I tell you a quick story about me
Please.
And Dave Murray that I think you're going to love? So this is an absolutely true story. When I was about 12 years old, there were a bunch of weather nerd kids, basically, 22, at my local grade school, and they were launching weather balloons. And so my cheeky ass went up to one of them and said, hey, could I have one of those balloons, sir? And this very nice guy with a giant head gave me this big balloon. And I went home and my dad blew it up with a vacuum cleaner. And we played with that thing for a week until it popped. And that was Dave Murray. I told that story and Dave goes, you're not going to believe me, but that was me. I was at that grade school in that year, and I gave a little blonde kid a weather balloon. Is that nuts?
It is nuts. And you know what's actually? Can I just add to this and forgive my in advance? Forgive my jab at you.
Yeah.
The amazing thing about it is, you know, Dave Murray never ages, and you look older than he does now.
Oh.
Bernie, why would you say that?
Now, I will say,
I'm trying to have some fun. Friends have to give each other a hard time.
I will say this. Dave does look good.
He does.
Like,
he does.
He's 70 now, he'll be 71, and I was checking him out pretty hard. He's done very well. He stayed out of that Laguna Beach sun. So I didn't think we're going to have Wheels on, but we got him because he's at home because his wife tested positive for COVID. So Wheels is on with us.
Sorry.
Here's my first question, and it's kind of the question. Even though I'm not a sports guy, the very fact that I know sports guys, all my friends are texting me saying like, hey, Glove, what's going on Monday? I just keep hearing it's a giant announcement. And I'm like, I don't know. Let me ask Bernie Miklas. So do we know anything? Do we suspect anything? Or are we all just kind of conjecturing?
Well, we're getting close to it. You know, Katie Wood did an excellent job reporting out a story today in The Athletic. I'm sure everybody is aware of that. And there were some really eye-opening disclosures about the condition, the state of disrepair in terms of their player development system and their minor league system and their ability to produce a steady supply of really good homegrown players. And a lot of stuff about how they're not taught properly because they don't have much of a staff down there and they're operating at a disadvantage. And I think we all knew that situation wasn't a good one, that they needed to do a lot of work on it. But to be honest with you, after reading that, it's a lot worse than I thought. So according to Katie Wu's reporting, and again, much credit to her, you know, Chaim Bloom's already full time with the Cardinals. Like he's no longer a consultant. And he is going to oversee the recommendations that he was hired to come up with, is like after auditing their entire minor league system. But he won't be the player development director. He's going to hire a player development director, which raises the question, okay, what exactly will be his role in the front office? Will they put him in charge? And John Mozeliak will spend his final year under contract kind of in the background? Or will Mo be calling the shots? So that is the big reveal that we're all waiting for. And I don't know if Kevin Wheeler's got an opinion about how that will go. But if they don't put – let me just throw this out real quick and I'll shut up. If you love Chaim Bloom so much that you gave him this huge task to do all the forensics on a fallen minor league system – and you've already hired him and moved him into the front office. Let's get it on. Give him the baton and let's go. Mm. I don't know why you would delay that a year. Wheels?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think Monday we're going to hear things that are important, that are meaningful, that are going to matter in the success of the franchise over the next 5 years or so, things that need to happen. I'm not sure anything we're going to hear is going to make fans excited. I'm not sure we're going to hear, like you're saying, Bernie, the new man in town is in charge, or we're making these big changes and you're going to get a famous hitting coach that everybody's going to love. I don't think it's going to be that. I think it's going to be a lot more about the nuts and bolts of player development. And I sure hope, like, from my personal standpoint, and I was going to ask you this, so I'll include this in my part of this, Bernie. I wanted to run it by you. I think a big part of what we need to hear is not just about player development at the minor league level, but player improvement at the major league level. We need to know a lot more. What are you going to do to get guys to break old habits? What are you going to do to change the shape of a struggling pitcher's breaking ball? What are you going to do to change the pitch mix that somebody's been using for years that isn't working? How are you going to get slumping guys going, or guys that need to hit the ball in the air? Like, I want to know about a plan for that too, because the farm system matters, but you've got big leaguers that need help right now.
Well, my answer to that is that they not only need to do an overhaul of the minor league system, because they're way behind on staffing, instructors, teachers, technology, tools. They're just way, way behind. And they've got five instructors, for example. Mm-hmm. And according to Katie Wu's story, five for the entire minor league system, five. The Milwaukee Brewers have 17.
Right.
And so maybe now we kind of figure out why the Brewers own the Cardinals, right? But as far as the major league level, I hate to be the guy that, you know, is going to just point out negatives, but I want to play it straight. I got to play it straight. There are problems at the major league level that reflect what's going on in the minor leagues. The Cardinals' major league staff is small compared to the industry standard. They don't have the vast, most modern, comprehensive technology available. They have to make do with less when it comes to working with players and
yep.
coming up with tactical advantages. Like, I think, for example, I think Dusty Blake does a really good job as their pitching coach. He does some of the things that you alluded to.
Yeah,
but he's also with the relievers, especially. But he's also working with limited resources, in terms of comparison to the rest of the industry.
Yep.
And listen, man, if they're going to bring the hitting coaches back, and Katie Wu alluded to that probability, pardon my crassness, but it's like, are they trying to alienate more customers? Like, are they trying to tick off their fans? I mean, my goodness, I don't know what to say other than to complain about certain things, because it's a really critical time for the Cardinals. I think it's great they finally realize that they need to do something about a minor league system that they allowed to deteriorate. It's going to be more expensive now and more of a project now because they let it gradually slide. But at least they now see the light of what they have to do. And I would say they're going to take a step back in terms of competing for whatever. You know, and I think the worst thing they can do Monday is to come out and say, well, we're still, you know, we're still competing for a playoff spot next year. Listen, they've got so much to work to do to clean up things. The more realistic thing to say is like, look, we're not calling this a rebuild. We don't have a title, but we need to change a lot of things. And we're probably going to have to step back to get all that done. And I say bravo, because why in the world would you want to continue in this cycle that you're in? I mean, you know, sometimes you got to bite the old bullet, right? You got to do what's tough to do. So I think fans would understand if it means the Cardinals in a couple of years are going to come out better for it. Why not? You're not ready to win anyway.
If John Mozeliak steps aside in the next couple of years, Bernie, this I want wheels, but let's start with Bernie. Is he likely to be shortchanged on his legacy because of these last 2 years? That's what we'll remember.
I think so. But it's one of those things, though, and I've been around a long time, and you know, voting on various Hall of Fame things and this and that. I think it's one of those things. In the immediate aftermath, his legacy would be damaged. I do think as time passes, though, people will also remember the crucial role he played in one of the great eras of Cardinals baseball. Like, I'm not into the extremes, like where you got to condemn everybody for everything, you know, because you're mad at them now or whatever, or because maybe they haven't done a good job in their final years in an important job. That doesn't mean everything that came before that is trash or it didn't matter. John Mozeliak did a lot of great things that mattered. And I think over time, the people that right now are kind of frustrated with him, don't want to give him any credit, I really think over time that will ease, that will pass, and there will be a lot more retrospective, introspective look at his impact on the Cardinals franchise in a good way.
Yeah, I think that's 100%. And you were around it more than I was, Bernie, but because I wasn't anywhere near St. Louis during the time. But nobody worries about the very end of Whitey Herzog's tenure. Nobody talks about it. It's not the story. The story is the body of work.
Right. That's exactly right. And the one thing I don't like about all this, as you can tell just by me being on all the shows, I mean, I'm going to speak my mind on these things and I don't hold back. What I don't like, however, is like, for example, if I say, because I 100% believe it and I have the facts to support it, that Ali Marmol has done a really good job running the bullpen this year. I think his work has been exceptional in that area. No, because certain a percentage of the fan base can't stand him. They don't like him. He's Moe's guy, blah, 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 blah. No, he does nothing right. You know, in other words, you've got to condemn everything because you don't like the guy. That means condemn everything about his managing. I can't live in that world, and I won't live in that world. I try to be fair.
Yeah. You know, I'm interested, Bernie. Do you think I have a theory? I think that happens because when you're a fan, changing a manager or a hitting coach is an easy fix. And you think that that just make that change and we'll be back where we want to be. The reality is much more difficult. You know, can you fix Nolan Arenado? Can you get Miles Michaelis competitive? Can you find a replacement for Goldie? Can you get Gorman and Walker going? Those aren't on one guy. Changing one dude's not changing any of that. I think that, but it's a lot easier to believe it that way. And I find teams and fan bases all over the league that do that, where the fans are like, just get this guy out of here, and that'll be the key to turning it around.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And listen, I don't know what they're in for next season. You know, I don't know whether they feel like Ali Marmol is actually fine because of what's ahead. Where you're not going to, let's be honest here, if you're entering a rebuild, and I'm not talking about a teardown, but a rebuild that's going to take a couple years, maybe three, to where you're ready to really contend. Like people, for example, say, hey, if Terry Francona wants to come out of retirement, you got to get him. Okay, I would agree with that, except not now, because why the heck would he want to walk into a rebuild? You know what I'm saying? Things like that. Skip Schumacher. Why would he want to walk into a rebuild when he would have it at this moment in time, he would have better options. So, you know, everyone's got to kind of recognize the situation they're about to enter into and adjust your expectations accordingly. That would be my advice. Not that anybody asked me for it.
So let's about 2 minutes left here. Let's talk about baseball on the West Coast. So when I was a kid, I loved Ted Simmons. I loved Kenny Reitz. I also loved Vida Blue and Joe Rudy and Gene Tennis and Raleigh Fingers. And I'm very sad about the situation in Oakland. Bernie, how about you?
I was up late last night. And I wanted to watch that game, you know, and I have the MLB.TV package, and so you can watch the replays of games. And I wanted to watch that and just get a sense of what the loss of that team means to the people of Oakland. They've always been a really spirited, very colorful fan base. And, you know, I covered some baseball there, including a World Series in 1989, before the earthquake. And always was impressed by what a festive-like atmosphere it was. And listen, it's really hard to explain. I mean, because it's not like, you know, the stadium was really bad, and the ownership through the years after the Tony La Russa era ended, and then, you know, Billy Beane came in and did some really good things with Moneyball and all that. But the fans have had to put up with a lot, and, you know, they had a lot of reasons to stay away, but they really love that team. And anytime a team's ripped out, the roots are just ripped out of the ground and moved away. I mean, it's a painful thing. I have great empathy for any town that has to go through that. And Oakland just keeps losing teams. And some people say, well, that's all right. The Bay Area's got to – well, anybody who's spent time out there, they realize that people don't look at it that way. I mean, Oakland's a city to its own. They're not one part of like a metropolitan area with San Francisco. So, yeah, I think it was sad. I enjoyed watching – all the emotion yesterday because it reminds us how much this stuff matters to people.
That's right. All right, Wheeler, you have 50 seconds. What do you think is the most plausible big news that could come out on Monday?
I mean, the biggest news is just going to be an outlining of the revamping and probably making it official that Chaim Bloom is going to be in a more official role. I think the thing that Bernie touched on with Bloom might be part of the announcement. So we saw with the Blues that they named Alex Steen, you know, the GM in waiting for when Doug Armstrong retires. Maybe that's the biggest part of Monday, although the more necessary stuff is the small stuff.
Very good. Thank you, buddy. We'll be back in a couple minutes. DGS.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
438 on the dot, DGS. Weather is supposed to get a little worse over the evening. Dave Murray was just live in studio in the 3 p.m. hour, and he said a little more rain, a little more wind. I'm watching it out the KMOX window right now, and the trees are sort of leaves upside down and kind of bending the wrong way. So just kind of, you know, be careful and look out. Wheels, I wanted to ask you about Ohtani. I've lost track of what he's at now, 50, 50, 52, 54, whatever it is. How much of a cyborg is this guy?
We've never seen anything like it, Dave. I mean, we've just never seen anything like it. And he's not a two-way player this year, right? He will be back to that next year, and that makes him even more of an alien. But just as a hitter, okay, so I saw this yesterday, and I might get this a little bit wrong, but this is along the right lines. So total bases, you just add up singles, doubles, triples, home runs, right? So four bases for a home run, three for a triple, so on. Total bases this year, he's had the most in Major League Baseball since 2001. And the highest total ever was Stan Musial, and I can't remember what year it was. It might have been 1958, something along those lines. And he's not going to be too far off of that. This is, without question, one of the best hitting years, and that's not even counting the 56 stolen bases. So, yeah, we're at 53 homers and 56 steals, Dave, and people just don't do this. I mean, it literally has never happened before, and for this to be happening while he's recovering from major elbow surgery is just... it's almost incomprehensible.
And I'm fascinated by this UNLV story, just quickly, so that Wheels can comment. I'll just set it up for you. This kid goes from Holy Cross. He transfers to UNLV. He's a stud. They're 3-0. They're just you know, snapping necks and cashing
checks.
They're
ranked for the first time in like 30, 40 years.
And an assistant coach, it seems, had promised him $100,000 in NIL, name, image, license, and then reneged. And so he's like, great, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. Your analysis.
Yeah, so what it sounds like is the offensive coordinator made a promise that he wasn't authorized to make, so the NIL collective never really knew about it. The head coach never authorized it. But either way, the miscommunication cost them. And there are a lot of people slamming the kid, which I understand, right? Because you're leaving your teammates. I totally get that. That would be a very difficult thing for me to do, to just back out on all my friends and teammates. But I would ask this of any of the people that are mad. If the head coach, who, by the way, is Barry Odom, who used to be at Mizzou, if he started not getting his paychecks from UNLV, do you think he'd still coach?
Nope.
He'd be gone, right? He would walk out the door if he wasn't getting his paychecks, and rightfully so. You cannot like that this is what it is. That's fine. But it is what it is, and whoever makes that kind of promise, whether it's an offensive coordinator, a head coach, or whatever – should be able to back that up before they speak anything, right? I mean, his mouth literally wrote a check that his ass couldn't cash.
So wouldn't you think, just with the dust settling now, that they are going to be hurt way more than $100,000 from this?
Yes, and this is what I don't understand. If this was starting to brew, somebody there should have made it happen, like before it became a problem. And here's another thing that came out of this too, and I think a couple of really smart sports business guys mentioned this on Twitter. If you're a player, get it in writing. Do not accept promises. Do not accept words. Get it in writing, because then you've got something to fall back on. But yeah, this is terrible. And by the way, unless UNLV pulls off a miracle and they've got a backup who can keep leading this way, This will cost them in the millions of dollars.
Wow. And this this will probably be a case that we talk about for years, you know, because it's never going to happen again. No, they're going to get it in writing from now on.
It's a precedent setter for sure.
Hey, guys. So the Rachel Zimmerman Show is not airing this weekend, but we wanted to play a little clip of it on the DGS for you now. This is a part of the interview I did with Dave Glover just a few weeks ago about his brother. So please enjoy. And you can catch the entire conversation on the Rachel Zimmerman Show podcast, available on the Odyssey app or anywhere else you get your podcasts.
We had the relationship we had when I was a kid, and then he kind of went away, and he was gone for a good 20 years of very little contact. He did not get along with my mom and dad, and he also had a lot of health issues, and one of the things he had wrong with him was he had psoriatic arthritis, which hit him very, very young. He was only 49 when he died, and his doctor said, you should move to the desert, so he moved to Tucson and kind of cut off contact. And then when my dad got sick with Alzheimer's in the late 90s, my brother moved back into my mom and dad's home, into the room where he slept as a kid, where he obviously didn't like it very much because he had kind of cut the family off. But it was one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard and certainly been a part of, where he took care of my dad with my mom and my sister. They did the yeoman's work, the heavy lifting with my dad, because I was living in St. Louis and I would come visit on the weekends, but they were there every single day. And they became best friends because my dad was so far into Alzheimer's that he didn't know who he was. He didn't know who my brother was or my mom or anything. And my dad was not a particularly sweet person, but when he was in the depths of Alzheimer's, he was. Mm-hmm. He was very sweet and very appreciative. And he thought that my brother owned the house and that he was letting him stay there. And they would take these walks together every day. And it was a really almost like a made up Hollywood story.
Yeah.
And so then when we were literally standing at my dad's casket, and this is going to be a little brutal, but it is what it is. When we're standing at my dad's casket, my brother, who was very dramatic and liked to say big things to shock you, sometimes because they were true, sometimes he just wanted to get your goat. And he said, well, I have nothing left to live for. I guess I'll go into the desert and eat a bullet. And I said, Keith, for the love of God, we're standing at my dad's casket. Like, you know, when people take their own lives, and I'm no expert, but I think sometimes you'll hear people say there was no indication, like Joel said with his son Gage.
Yeah.
There was zero indication. He seemed like he was happy. There was nothing wrong. My brother was the opposite. He talked about it a lot. And not to the point that you ignore it, but it didn't have the same effect because he had said it so many times. And that was in March. And then in December, we found out later he had gotten involved with drugs. I think pretty much he was on disability, and he didn't have enough money coming in to cover all of his expenses. And this is before the show had hit it big, before I ever signed a contract. And he was asking me for money and wanting me to buy his guitars I didn't have the money for, because I was really struggling financially. So I was trying to help him the best I could. And that was sort of the nature of our relationship the last month or so, was just frustration. Him being frustrated with me because I wouldn't help him, me being frustrated with him because I was in dire straits as well. And then we lost him on Christmas Eve.
I just can't imagine what that would have been like on Christmas. And I know, being your friend for so long, that Christmas is hard for you because of that.
Yeah, always will be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like we found out he was missing on the 23rd, and we all pretty much knew. In fact, I had just gotten this Mastiff puppy, and we were upstairs, Maureen and I, and the phone rang, and I said, that's my sister. My brother killed himself.
You just knew.
I just knew. And she said, ugh, what a terrible thing to say. And then as soon as she answered the phone, I knew I was right.
Yeah.
So
So even though, you know, you said your brother had said, you know, many times that he was planning on doing this, and it's like, is he going to do it? Is he not? Even though maybe you could see it coming, I'm sure you're still left with just so many questions and so much. I would assume the unknown is the worst part. It's just wondering, like, what more could I have done, or what more did he need?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It's not that money solves everything, but he had a lot of money problems. And it was only about a year after that that I signed my first contract, and I would have been able to help him.
Yeah.
And who knows if that would have made the difference, but it would have made some difference. And then I regret, because he was my older brother. And like I said, he was didn't suffer fools and was aggressive and could be kind of mean. I think that's probably what kept me from having like a real come to Jesus with him. And are you, you've mentioned this several times. Are you okay? Do you need to get help? He was every person's the kind of person you can say that to, but some are easier than others.
Yeah.
And he was way out on the difficult scale. It was almost certain that there would have been a big backlash. And because he had said it before, I didn't do it. And I was kind of mad at him too. Like, you know, I was struggling financially and I'm buying these $1,000 guitars that I don't need. And there's a little bit of resentment, you know, cause he just kept coming back and asking for more. And that's just the way life is, you know, like if anyone in your life were to just be gone one day, even if it weren't as dramatic as that, you would have regrets and, oh, I wish I would have told them this. I wish I would have never said that. It just amplifies it all by 100 when someone takes their own life. Yeah.
The full conversation is available wherever you get your podcast, guys. Thanks for listening to The Rachel Zimmerman Show and The Dave Glover Show on KMOX.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.